disagree, but one of the measures where we can make and ensure that the degree of accountability is effected on the basis that those issues that when they are raised, they shouldn't just disappear. But also, we must be upfront to say that as the Minister of Finance will be delivering the budget speech today, we have to see whether some of those issues, when we deal with the departmental budget, is it possible or will they be able to be accommodated in relation to the financial responsibilities that will go with the actual commitments that have been made. So that is basically the main issue that we think is going to be of interest. Because in most cases, we continue to agree on certain things, move certain things, and only to find out down the line, sometimes these are what I always call unfunded mandates that are presented. The second part is what I tried to explain yesterday, is in relation to the licensing regime, both in the minerals and the energy sector, how the department is managing those issues, including responding on the complaints that have been received, not just by this committee or members from this committee. Some have even been referred to the speaker for the department to respond. So we will start, and I will just give this first part that it will not, I don't think it will. We now 10 past, the department can continue up until 22. From there, if things agree or are possible, we should be starting with what I think is more of a serious stuff on the licensing exercise by 10 o'clock, but we will see as time goes. DG, the platform is yours.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chair, to come and present to the PPC. Greetings to all honorable members that are in the meeting, all the DDGs, chief directors, the support staff to the PPC, as well as also the ministry, our media in attendance. Chair, as you have correctly pointed out that we've got two presentations. The first one, we'll try to be very brief. We will be dealing with the briefing on the impact of the State of the Nation address on the activities of the department. Mr. Mlauzi, who is the head of strategy in the department, will take us through the presentation. I don't want to waste time. I would like to invite Mr. Mlauzi to take us through, to take the honorable members through the presentation. Mr. Mlauzi.
Thank you very much, DG, Chairperson, honorable members, all protocol observed. I just want to check with the Secretariat Chair if they are able to share. Otherwise, then I should be given the rights to share the presentation.
We have given co-hosting rights to Nontlantla and to Nana.
Oh, okay. Thank you. And Nana, please display the presentation. Thank you very much. Go to the next slide. If you can increase the presentation a little bit. Thank you very much. Chair, this and members, this is the presentation outline or layout. It has got those 4 points, which is the intro, our response to COVID, accelerating the economy with those subheadings, and then there'll be the conclusion. The next slide. The President, in his State of the Nation address on the 13th of February, outlines the government's main objectives to say there is a need to focus on the following. The first one was COVID-19 pandemic. How do we respond to that? And the second one, to how do we then contribute and respond to accelerating economic recovery that will create jobs, but also to look into the Eskom issue with regard to their plans to increase generation capacity. And there was also the manner in which, how are we going to fight corruption as organs of state and government, as well as the rationalization and strengthening of our state-owned entities. Now, Chair and members, this presentation will provide the department response to those commitments that have been highlighted above. Next slide. With regard to the response and our contribution to the COVID-19 regulation or framework, the department is still continuing to collaborate with key stakeholders in this regard, Chairperson. And as you can see that everything that we do, we collaborate and link with the Department of Health, the Department of National Institute of Occupational Health, Department of Employment and Labor, but we also organize labor unions and employees or employers are also part of our stakeholders. The minister is continuously engaging the mining sector to ensure that there is vigilance in terms of the manner in which we respond to COVID-19. As we speak now, Chair, the minister has recently met with the Minerals Council of South Africa on the envisaged plans for the rolling out of the vaccine program. But this has not been limited to that entity alone. This has also being done with the CEOs of the mining companies on strategic interventions on COVID as well as occupational health and safety matters. With regard to collaborations on COVID-19, next slide. In terms of our response to the economic recovery and reconstruction plan, the department will increase the mining exploration activity with the aim of reaching 3% expenditure in the global exploration. So we're going to doing this by engaging with the mining sector to promote renewed investment through a conducive policy and regulatory framework. This is one of the issues that is on the agenda today, to say to what extent and how are we going to reduce the timeframes for mining licenses, as that will support efforts to invest in green jobs and improve efficiencies through one environmental system. We'll also deal, Chairperson and members, with boosting measures that will include land rights, digital migration, mineral rights, but also market tools, local beneficiations, and export potential. Next slide. With regard to Eskom, how Eskom is going to be supported by the department to increase generation capacity, the president, the department will soon be announcing the successful bids for the 2,000 megawatts of the emergency power. This will assist in terms of making sure that there are initiations for the procurement of additional 11,800 megawatts of power from renewable energy, but also from natural gas, battery storage, and coal in line with the IRP 2019. We will be coming in few weeks' time and issue a request for proposal of 2,600 megawatts from wind and solar energy as part of bid window 5. This will be followed by another bid window this year in August. We will amend Schedule 2 of the Electricity Regulation Act in the next 3 months to increase the licensing thresholds for embedded generation. Chairperson, this will include consultation with stakeholders that, like I indicated before, on the level at which the new threshold should be set. Next slide. The department will also undertook to rapidly and significantly increase generation capacity outside of ESCOM in order to deal with the supply and demand deficit. And we have since, Chairperson, initiated the procurement of power from projects that can deliver electricity into the grid within 3 to 12 months. And then the amended electricity generation on new generation capacity, but also to clarify requirements for municipalities when undertaking a process to develop or buy power from IPPs. We have initiated the evaluation of the bids for 200 megawatts under that risk independent power producer program. Next slide. Now, that chair gives you a sense in terms of how we responded to the announcement of the successful bidders. Here, the department is saying 28 bids were received in December 2020 with over 5,000 megawatts of capacity on offer. The evaluation started a little bit late. It was unanticipated. However, that has since been corrected, and the evaluation is currently running and will be finalized. Bidders will be announced not later than the end of March this year. And the preferred bidders are expected to take between 12 to 18 months to construct the power plant. Now there, Chair, it gives you an outline detail of the procurement of these 11,800 megawatts. As you can see there, Chair, on the table, there is the type of technology, the amount of power in terms of that particular technology, and then the RFP to the market, but as well as the connection year. I think, Chair, this one I'm going to pass because I only read one to say there's solar and wind. You can see the power is 2,600 megawatts. And then there is the second one, it's solar and wind again, so it's times two. It will be done in 2022. The other one is 2023. You've got the storage of 513 megawatts. RFP is August this year. And then the connection year is 2022. There's a coal with 1,500 megawatts RFP to the market to be done in December. Connection is 2023 and 2027. Gas, 300 megawatts, RFP, December this year. It's 2024 to 27. And then the wind, 1,006. Is 2024. Next slide. So as far as the amendment to Schedule 2 of the Electricity Regulation Act within the next 3 months to increase the licensing threshold for embedded generation, it is the department's view, Chair, that the threshold is actually not a bottleneck for the generation for own use. The wheeling power through grid and reopening of existing supply contracts by ESCOM are some of the bottlenecks raised by the industry. And that the changing threshold must be accompanied by the following frameworks, Chair. That is the wheeling or transportation of power through the transmission and distribution networks, including municipal frameworks. The other one is the balancing tariffs, which is necessary for fair and transparent recovery of cost. And of course, there is the implementation and monitoring of grid code necessary for ensuring power systems integrity. Next slide. Ms. Guerrero, next slide, please. Thank you. As I've said earlier, Chair, with regards to state-owned entities, there is a plan that has been put in place to ensure that the department complies and responds to the statement, to the State of the Nation address, to reevaluate and ensure that the state-owned entities are self-sustainable. Next slide. With regard to that, our project is as follows. The minister has approved the establishment of a single governance structure for the current Nexa group of companies starting from March this last year. This process involves the rationalization and repurposing of Nexa as a group, as a commercial and sustainable state-owned company that should be able to meet government developmental objectives. The new business model transition will transition Nexa from the current incoherent quasi-holding operating model dependent on government grant to a fully-fledged new Nexa business. It's important, Chair, to note that any changes within the Nexa group are being done in a manner that ensures that Nexa's core mandate will be delivered and supported through commercial objectives to ensure future sustainability of the organization. Next slide. In May, the minister approved the planned merger of IGAS, SFF, and Petro SA to form a single entity that would form the nucleus of an integrated national oil champion. In June last year, Cabinet approved the request to merge three subsidiaries of the Central Energy Fund. This decision paves the way for the formation of the National Petroleum Company, comprising of IGAS, Strategic Fuel Fund, and Petro SA. The SEF board was mandated to manage the process and ensure the establishment of the National Petroleum Company within 6 months. The merger started in September, and a consortium is led by A.T. Kenny. Led by A.T. Kenny was appointed to assist the SEF group in implementing the project. Over the past three and a half months, the department have achieved significant progress across key areas of the project, which will be shown in the next slide. Next slide. So, in terms of the milestone, Chairperson, we have conducted several engagements with the other government departments, business, but also organized labor and other key stakeholders. We have also extensively assessed the major model archetypes for a commercial, legal, and operational perspective for final input to cabinet. Currently, we are currently detailing the major execution that will be ready for day one. We have also completed comprehensive baseline assessments, identifying the 1.1 billion EBITDA measure potential. We have confirmed the SA National Petroleum Company strategy, but also there are strategic initiatives that have been put in place, which identified the 60.9 billion new market potential. We are currently detailing the financial implications as well as the funding plan. We have confirmed the operating model design principles and building blocks. We also currently detailing the operating model and transition plan. Next slide. Chair, all this content of the presentation is aligned to the minister's performance agreement, and the department can confirm that there are plans in place that are going to be implemented to respond and contribute to the economic reconstruction and recovery plan. I thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mlauzi. Chair, as we have made a commitment that this will be a very brief presentation. And so we are done, Chair. Thank you very much. Over to you, Chair.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, DG and the department. I was worried that your presentation, when there were two issues highlighted by the SONA, might be equal to the SONA. You have done very well. You have proven that you targeted exactly what relates to your sector. Honorable members, with the time that we have, is there any take? Any take, any questions of clarity? Okay. Seems of that. Yes.
No, a chairperson.
Is that Volmaran?
Yes, Chair.
Oh, I'm looking on the side whether are there any hands up. Okay.
My apologies, Chair.
Besides you, is there any member also who wants to contribute or ask questions of clarity? Okay, it seems it's only you, Honorable Volmaran.
Chair, once more, good morning to yourself, Chair, and honorable members, and the team as led by the DG, including the staff from Parliament. Chair, mine is not a question. It's a small a comment, which is firstly welcoming the presentation, and by the look of things and having heard the SONA and interacted with it, I would say that the presentation and the trouble that the department took in aligning their vision and operations to that of the SONA pronouncements gives hope. And I could see that a number of initiatives that have been pronounced in the SONA falls directly in line with what the department had also already planned. So mine was to say I see an alignment with regard to the pronouncement and some specific time frames, which I'm anticipating that the other time frame of the 6 months, it's on its way to be done, because they've done quite a lot of work in the 3.5 months. And that was my contribution to appreciate the alignment that I see there, Chairperson. Thanks.
Okay. Honorable Valencia, I see your hand, and then Honorable Matogwe.
Greetings, Chairperson, my colleagues in the Portfolio Committee, DG and his team, our table staff, and all media houses who might be in the house. Chairperson, Mr. Mlauzi is talking about ESCOM's readiness in terms of this SONA pronouncements by the president. But with the current state that ESCOM is in, I am worried, Chair. Are they ready for these 2,600 megawatts that the department says will make available so that it can be added to the grid? If maybe I can just get clarity on that one, Chair. Chairperson, I thought the DG will start by sending condolences or yourself to the miners that we've just had that passed on at Van der Bijl Park. They were trapped. I think it's been 3 or 4 days now. I just forgotten the name of the mine, but it's in Van der Bijl Park. Also that there were also 6 that got banned. I think it's Banya, Chair. It was all over the news on 4 or 5. Let me stop there, Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay. Honorable Matogwe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I have quite a few questions. I think the first one is on the pronouncements that they will be opening up for bids. And I think that one thing I'm interested in particular, it's also following up on conversations we have had specifically with SMMEs who have not been able to actually even meet the requirements for these bids. I'm interested in number one, that a lot of SMMEs have failed to meet the basic requirements, and whether government is doing anything in particular, or the department, not necessarily government, but is the department doing anything to perhaps capacitate these SMMEs so that they are actually able to meet these requirements? Because what that happens is that those that were previously disadvantaged then still remain disadvantaged because they do not have access or capacity that a lot of the private owned companies have. And also, what are the plans in terms of integrating these SMMEs into municipal IDPs and into municipal IDPs? And another question that I wanted to ask is perhaps because I heard that the department has amended a certain regulation so that municipalities are able to provide or access electricity. So I wanted perhaps for the DG to sort of elaborate what were these amendments that were made. And then also, I think it's on the issue of just general electricity generation, understanding that Eskom has or provides almost 95% of the electricity in the country. But also understanding as well the issues of climate change and environmental issues, where coal generation as it stands works out against the current conversations that society is having right now about environmental issues or climate change. So I wanted to find out, number one, because I've not seen in the presentations anything related to clean coal initiatives. And also I'm interested in perhaps what are the proportions, because we know that a portion of Eskom is from coal, what proportion is from solar, what proportion is from wind, and all those things. And then the last one, it's perhaps on the issue of wind generation, because I know that there was an issue specifically in the Karoo where you find out that a lot of wind energy or wind generation, it usually happens around 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. in the morning. And that energy or that electricity that could have been generated, that goes to waste because a lot of people are not using it. And there aren't as many energy storage facilities to actually take advantage of such things where that energy that is produced where people are not using it, especially for natural energy, is actually stored so that it can be fed back into the grid of Eskom at one point. I just wanted to find out perhaps when we are told that there's initiative to increase the capacity of Eskom to generate electricity, whether such things are being taken into consideration, specifically increasing the capacity of any storage facilities in the country. Thank you very much.
Okay, DG, I'm sure you will respond. On that part, Honorable Malinga, I honestly was not aware, I've not seen, I've not opened 405. But surely I will try and do a follow-up, but DG can also assist if they are aware of that, just for heads up on this matter. The last issue, DG, I think it must be, I understand that you identified issues that emerged out of the sauna that relates to the sector where we are. But on this matter of the merger of the entities or rationalization, I'm not sure whether the department says it's only focusing on one entity, which is the SERF, those that are under SERF. We had at some point raised the fact that there is a need to look beyond just the three. There are other entities that are almost doing almost the same thing, whether it's in exploration, whether it's on regulation, whether it's on commercial and so forth. Whether some of those entities, there no need to, even if it's not necessarily a matter, to draw up a program of cooperation so that they can complement each other's work instead of being seen to be in competition with one another. So I think that to me will remain very critical. But let me give it to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I have a team of DBGs. I will allocate questions to them, and I'll come at the end if there will still be outstanding questions. I'll start with DDG Mbele to respond to the question from Honorable Madokwe. Then Mr. Maqubela will come in on issues of coal as well. Then lastly, it will be Mr. Msiza to respond to the question that Honorable Malinga has raised. Thank you very much, Chair. Mr. Mbele?
Thanks, DG. Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, and everyone in the portfolio committee meeting. I'm going to be responding to some of the few questions that talks to issues around electricity. I'm starting with the question that asks if ESCOM is ready to take the 2,000 megawatts that is being procured. I can confirm that ESCOM is ready because as part of the procurement process, we actually undergo a process where we engage ESCOM extensively, and before we issue the documents to the market or the request for proposals, ESCOM obtains a board approval to basically support the fact that we should go ahead, and when the power is procured, ESCOM will fully participate in the process. So in that regard, yes, ESCOM has been part of the process, and ESCOM is ready to take the power that we procuring. Then there was a question around the bids. What is the department doing to capacitate SMEs to participate in the program? I think let me first start by indicating that one of the things that we've been doing on the program, specifically if you look at the risk mitigation, the recent one, we have put provisions that ensures that there is increased South African participation, specifically from the previously disadvantaged groupings in the population. And in this regard, for example, we had a requirement that 49% of the project ownership must be local South African, and 30% of that must be designated to what we call a previously disadvantaged or black participants. So we do, and in this regard, what we're doing, we're forcing the companies to also go out and look for these SMEs and capacitate them and assist them. But there's also been programs run by some of the associations which we participate in, where we there are a series of sessions where the different parts of the program are explained, and people are helped to understand the requirements in terms of the program. The third question was around what the amendment that we did to allow municipalities to procure own power. What did we exactly do? In this regard, let me start by indicating that municipalities have in terms of the electricity regulations on new generation capacity. Municipalities and all organs of state in the energy sector have always been allowed legally to participate in the generation or procurement of new generation capacity. All we did in the regulation, we provided clarity in terms of the requirements that municipalities will have to meet when they request a Section 34 determination from the minister. And the reason we did this is because in the past, some of the requests that we are receiving from municipalities were not either clear, or some of them, when we assess them, we realize that because sometimes of lack of capacity in municipalities, the proposals were actually weighed against the municipality. So the developers were actually putting onerous requirements on municipalities in terms of the agreements that they were proposing to those municipalities. So all we did now is to put requirements in place that will allow us to fairly and transparently assess the applications and for us to be able to say yes, we support or we don't support. So basically that's what the amendments have done. And that process is basically not necessarily a new process. We've just piggybacked on existing process of PPPs, public-private partnerships, where when an organ of state enters into a PPP, treasury regulations requires that they have certain things in place, including a feasibility study that would have been commented on by National Treasury and other affected departments. So those are some of the requirements that we just clarifying that they must support the application to the department. Then there was a question around the coal and climate change and anything related to clean coal initiatives. In the IRP, we do flag that all new investment in coal going forward will have to be in cleaner coal technologies, and because what we aim to do is that when you look at the planning, the integrated resource plan, is that there is an emission target emission cap that we have placed, where basically we say that the emissions will peak as we complete Medupi and Kusile, they will plateau. Even if we commission new coal generation capacity, they will plateau because you'll be decommissioning some of the old plants, so you wouldn't necessarily be adding to the emissions. And from 2025 or 2026, they will decline as you decommission and replace with cleaner and clean and renewable technologies going into the future. And this cap is in line with our nationally determined contribution in terms of the Paris Agreement. In terms of the initiatives, we have been engaging or been approached by a number of international companies that are in this space, and we're hoping when we issue a tender for the 1,500 coal that's in the IRP, we will see some of these companies coming forward with proposals in terms of the technologies that they possess. There was a part of the question was about the proportions from the various technologies. If I can, in the integrated resource 2019, there is a table that contains these proportions, and at a high level, I can indicate that what we're projecting is that if we maintain the energy mix as we have it today, and we introduce new capacity as per the plan in the IRP, we will then sit at 43% of installed capacity from coal in 2030, and then we'll sit at about 30% from renewable energies. But when you look at the energy applied or the consumption, coal will still contribute or form about 60% of the energy mix, while renewable energy will only be about 23-25%. And then the last question was around energy and wind blowing at night, and when we do the planning for all this capacity, do we take such into account? Yes, we do, and hence there is, if we look at the integrated resource plan, there is some battery storage that the plan envisages in the coming years. But in terms of the current infrastructure that's on the ground, there is a pump storage that would act as, which is basically storage where you pump the water up the hill when there is low demand, and you pump it down to generate electricity when there is demand. So there is some sort of storage already in the system in terms of pump storage plants that we have. And DG, that's basically the questions I think that I had picked up. Thanks.
Thank you very much, DDG. Mr. Bakulena, if you want to add.
Thanks, DG. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. DG, I think the issues on coal, Mr. Mbele has covered. So I have nothing to add on that at this stage. Thanks, DG.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mankulela. Bounces?
Thank you, DG. Good morning to the honorable chairperson, honorable members and colleagues. Indeed, Honorable Malinga, there was an accident that happened on the 17th of February at the Acetometal Thunder Bay Park works or plant, steel plant, where a 90 meter stack or structure fell on a control room, there were three workers there. Although the accident happened at a plant, which is not a mine, we fully agree with Honorable Malinga that we have to continuously, on the mining side as well, continue to be vigilant on health and safety matters. In fact, the minister has engaged with the stakeholders in the sector to be vigilant on this. And we as a department as well, we continue to engage and monitor the issues of health and safety in the mines. And we fully agree with Honorable Malinga that on the mining side, we have to continuously also be vigilant on this side. Thank you, DG.
Thank you very much, Mr. Msiza. Honorable Chair, let me also welcome the comment from Honorable Walmarans. The DDGs have responded to the questions from both the Honorable. No, there is one question, Mr. Msiza. We'll make a follow-up on this one if you have any information on Sibanye. That is a question that Honorable Malinga has raised. Now, Chair, I think on the call, just to add on what DDG Mbele has just actually, touched on, is that as you know that we have been discussing the issue of a cleaner coal technology or technologies, we can report, Chair, in responding to your question as well, it is linked to the question from Honorable Madokwe, in terms of the work that is being done by different entities in the department. Now, we have Council for Geoscience that is hard at work in looking at this matter, and it is partnering with different organizations. I know it's a matter that they would need to also to appraise members about. And so at the right time, we can come and present a detailed report in this regard, Honorable Chair. Now, also in responding to your question on the complementary work of different entities within the department, if you look at the work of CGS, you look at what MinTech has been doing and continues to do with diagnostic kits. I mean, it is also part of making sure that we respond to the challenges that we are faced with as the country to complement the work of government in general. And also, you remember that there is a work at Ketapili under Nexa that is being done. Our entities have been very, good in making sure that they also produce sanitizers in trying to fight COVID-19. There are quite a number of initiatives, and so we can present these initiatives to the committee at the right time, as we did with MINTEC, Honorable Chair. But we have taken note of your point, and also the comment from Honorable Volmarans and the questions from Honorable Members. Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay. Okay, thank you, TG. Can you now go to the, Mr. Lang?
Yes, my chairperson.
You want to say something, or it just opened up by mistake?
Yes, Chair, I would like to get some clarity if possible, Chair.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to the committee members, the department, and everyone in the platform. Chair, my one is on the petroleum side. Just the clarity on that one, where, as it reflected on the presentation, that the department has started the process of emerging SEF, PetroSA, I guess, and strategic fuel fund. I just wanted to check, because I know PetroSA is one of the SOEs that has been rescued by the government from time to time. Actually, it was collapsing. So I just need to check if what will be the implication in particular with the focus on job losses with this imaging. And also, the second question will be, I'm sure the department is aware that Engine Refinery has resolved on shutting down their operations, and they will be changing the refinery to a depot, meaning now they will be importing fuels from abroad for resale. And in this process, about 700 jobs will be lost because of this engine resolution. And Engine has already started with their Section 189 consultation.
Shall we call order now on Honorable Langa, Chair?
What's the order now?
No. I haven't had the department presenting that, Chair. So I'm not sure whether Langa has a different agenda than myself.
No. The department spoke on the issue of what was highlighted in the entity. One, two, there was an issue with regards to the reviewal of the entities under government of all state entities. In relation to this, I thought the matter was in relation to the impact on the oil and gas industry, which is being said it is part of the focal point. So, Honorable Langa, for now, we're still in order.
Can I
continue? Continue, Honorable Langa. some other issues weren't resolved here.
Yeah, so having said that, having been as well a Petronet employee myself, I'm aware that the demand in the country for fuels has been always, exceeded the supply. So I'm just checking now with the department. If the department has any plans or what are their interventions, because we are aware that PetroSA was struggling and these other companies, your Shells, your BP, are very likely to follow suit with Engine of importing as well the fuel because they're in business, they are profit making companies. So maybe that is their easy way out, you know. So what is the company's stance on that? Or have they looked into that as well when they were doing their research? Thank you, Chairperson. I hope my question is clear.
Okay, Juju, you can give a response. I'm not saying there's something wrong, né? But Honorable Laga, that issue down the line is still coming to the committee. They still have to present comprehensively on the process of the merger and what is required. But I'm not saying they shouldn't answer now, but we still, in the program we adopted, they still have to come and make a full presentation on the merger between SAF, among the three SAF companies, which is PetroSA and the iGas as well as the SFS. But DG, you can give an answer, not a presentation, an answer.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me welcome the question from Honorable Lange. Yes, indeed, as you have indicated, that as per the program that you have presented in the previous meetings of PPC, that we expected to come back to the PPC to give an update in regard with the merger of the three entities, which is SFF, as well as EGS, and also PetroSA. But what I can just confirm to the honorable members is that the process is moving towards the right direction. That's what we can just confirm in terms of the measure of the three entities. And so we'll come back and give a full presentation to the honorable members as the program. Coming to the second question by Honorable Lange, we must just actually also highlight this point that from the side of the department, as you know that, you know, we have a plan, especially on beneficiation. Now, our contention has always been that when these companies, they came to present to us, that they're now disinvesting in beneficiating in the country. They want to have, you know, refined products, which presented, you know, a challenge to us. And so we continue to engage with them. As you know, some of them, they are changing their strategies after they have met with the department, after we have also presented our side of the story, which is basically against the repurposing of those, you know, plants. Now, responding directly to the question, on section 189, I'm not quite sure, Honorable Lange and honorable members, where this one comes from, because in a meeting that we had with the executive of Engine, they made a commitment to the department that as they will be repurposing their plant, there shall be no any adverse impact to their job. And I have been in conversation with the CEO as well of Engine about this matter. And so he gave that, you know, assurance that, you know, the process would not have any adverse impact to the jobs. But we will continue monitoring this, you know, process. But then that's what we can present to date. Maybe, Honorable Chair, with your indulgence, I know that this is an area of DDG Matubela, Let me also allow him to respond to the question or to add on what I've just actually responded or touched on. Over to you, Mr. Matsubela.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Indeed, as DG has indicated, the consultations between the department and ANJA are ongoing. We are still discussing the modalities of the future of that asset. But I must say that it is something that we must be aware of, that globally, most of the oil companies are offloading carbon-intensive assets. And what is happening is not unique to South Africa. Just as an indication, I mean, Shell globally is looking at closing about 8 refineries. And in South Africa, I think the option of offloading instead of closing is one that is being looked into. And this is driven by their commitment to have a net zero carbon position by 2040, some by 2050. So you will find that they are still committed to having a downstream asset, as in the marketing side, but they don't want to be engaged in any activity that emits carbon. So this is what informs all of them. It has got nothing really to do with the regulatory environment. Just lastly to say that in terms of the focus of the department is that we are focusing on security of supply at all costs. So we do everything possible to make sure that should we get to that eventuality, we do have facilities that can ensure that we always have supply of fuel. But as the DG has indicated and the chair, we can come back and give a full explanation when required. Thank you very much. Thanks, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Okay, can we now go to the department again to make a presentation with regards to the licensing regime? Did you go and do your work with regards to the issue of engine, recognizing the fact that the first difficult, first challenge we will have to go through is how do private companies operate? By experience, sometimes those companies, their focus could be complying with the law. I'm not sure to what extent can you as a department, but yes, it's correct that you must be abreast about the developments that are taking place. But unfortunately, I'm not sure. It's one of those technical issues where when it comes to the law, it follows a different direction in terms of its operation as a private entity compared to a state-owned entity. That could be one of the issues down the line you may have to confront and deal with it as we move on. But can we go now to the licensing regime by the department? To you, over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. We are now going to take Honorable Members through a detailed presentation, and it is divided into two. We have the petroleum and the minerals part, and we'd also, Chair, with your permission, on NERSA, because we did not incorporate it into the presentation, we can just talk to the issues under NERSA. We have requested one of the executives from NERSA also to be part of the meeting. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Now I'm going to invite DDG Makubela to take us through the detailed presentation. Over to you, DDG.
Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. As DG has indicated, I'm going to be introducing the petroleum side. In fact, I'm introducing the minerals and petroleum regulation licensing process. We've decided to divide the presentation. The first presentation will be done by Chief Director, Mr. Sithosa, on the petroleum side. And then I will do the one on the mineral licensing process. But just to say, Chair, that by way of introduction, we became a branch, a combined branch of minerals and petroleum regulation in October of 2020. And we are charged with the licensing as well as the compliance monitoring and enforcement. But of course, today our focus is on licensing for both the two areas of the economy. Just to say also that this is a challenging environment, both from a minerals and petroleum sector. And I think that we need to make some admissions before I hand over to Mr. Sithosa, that we believe that on the petroleum side, to a large degree, we're on top of the situation. However, and I need to make this acknowledgement, is that what we have seen as a trend is that everyone wants a wholesale license. So we are inundated with a number of wholesale licenses. And what people do is they use consultants. And because they use consultants, they meet the requirements of the law. But you look at this and you know perfectly well that the chances of actually all these licenses succeeding in the market is really limited. On the mineral regulation, which I will talk to later, we do have a huge hump that we have to go through, and I will talk to that later. But I want to say that upfront that the step one in terms of resolving any challenge is to acknowledge. And we do want to acknowledge on the mineral side that we have that hump. And with that, Chair, with your permission, I would want Mr. Sithosa to then take us through the petroleum licensing process. Thank you, Chair. Mr. Sithosa?
Thank you, DDG. Good morning, DG. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honorable Members. The slide is not yet beamed. Can Mr. Guerrero fly the slide, please? Hello?
Mr. Sosa, the slides are beamed.
I can't see anything from my side. Can I perhaps use what I have from my own laptop? The first slide is with regard to presentation on the petroleum process licensing process. The second slide has to go to do with the presentation layout, of which we'll be speaking of the Empowering Act, the structure of the Chief Directorate for Petroleum Licensing and Fuel Supply. We'll look at the processing of analyzing and evaluation of applications. We'll talk around the requirements to obtain a license category of licenses. We'll talk about the issues of regulations for conditions applicable to each license category. We'll look at the statistical indicators that are affecting the industry up to now. We'll look at the application processing status and the initiatives to eliminate backlog. And I must say that the reason of a backlog is as a result of the period that we spent in the previous year of about 4 months not being operational, and that has affected us immensely. My fourth slide will be to explain the structure of the petroleum licensing chief directorate, of which the controller, who is the deputy director general, he's a controller, and the chief director reports to the controller, and we have a directorate of doing the licensing analysis, and we have a directorate for full supplies, which I'm not going to talk around full supplies today, and then we've got 9 directorates, which are regions represented in the entire 9 provinces of the country. How do you go about to lodge an application? You can either do it through a walk-in, or you can do it through by post. When you walk into our offices, the application would be captured, accepted, and after being accepted, of which I'll talk around the process of how the application is accepted. And also from there, we'll go into the evaluation stage, which is the analysis process. A decision will be made whether the license is granted or it is declined. And if it's declined, an applicant has the right to make an appeal within 60 days of receiving the decision. And depending on the minister's directives, the application will either be re-evaluated or he can confirm the decision of the controller. Coming to the process of analysis, of analyzing and evaluation of application, we will receive a complete application form which gets captured on our PPAL system. We'll issue a receipt to the applicant with the reference number and a notice to the applicant to go and advertise. And there are various types of advertisements. If an application is for a manufacturing and a wholesale, the applicant has to advertise in 2 circulating national newspapers in English and any other language. And if it's an application is for the retail and site license, then they must advertise in 2 circulating local newspapers in English and any other language in the area where the proposed site and retail will be trading. And the publication must be lodged with the regional office where the application was captured. What we need when we receive applications, we need a complete application form. We'll need a signed declaration that will be applicable to each license category. We'll need the motivation of the business proposition, which is, you know, in a simple terms, is the business plan. We'll need the certified documents of the applicant's ID numbers, if he's a natural person. In the case of a company, we'll need the company registration documents, and for a citizen, must be a South African, for a non-South African citizen, we need a permanent residence permit or employment permit and proof of residence in South Africa or proof of domicile in South Africa, as the case may be. I've already spoken to the registration documents. And in my next slide, we'll look at the net present calculations. In a simple term, a net present calculation, it's a projection. It's a business projection that one has to provide over a five-year period with all the data assumptions used in calculation of that. What does this data involve? It involves where the location of the proposed site would be, what are the traffic flow, what are the traffic numbers that will be passing by the site. And we'll also look at, in case of an application made by a non-natural person, a declaration to the an extent of ownership of the business by historically disadvantaged South Africans as defined in the charter. This is just to drive that transformation. In the case of an applicant made by a natural person claiming to be a historically disadvantaged South African, a declaration by that person to that effect. Just to make sure that we don't have applications where people are fronting. In continuation, we'll also need a declaration by the applicant stating that the applicant is in compliance with the Act, the regulations, and all other national, provincial, and local government laws applicable for the operation of the activity concerned. This is just to make sure that we do not issue a license where we are in contravention of any other applicable laws in of a particular area. We look at, we need a certified copy of the title deed. I must emphasize it's not necessarily just everything has to be with the title deed, because there are areas where there are traditional lands where we would accept a permission by the chief tenancy of the area, which would have given the person to the right to operate on a particular piece of land. We'll also accept the any permission from the municipality that gives the title for or the right for the person to operate at a particular area. We'll look at the land use zoning certificate, which is issued by a competent person. Authority. We look at the financial security for rehabilitation. This is specifically in the event that the business gets discontinued and they have to extract the tanks underground and to demolish the place, just to make sure that everything is complies with the environmental laws. In an event where the application will be built along the national road, will need permission from SANRAL. There are three types of licenses that we issue. It is the manufacturing license, it's a wholesale license, a site and a retail license. A site and a retail license, they are always linked. You cannot separate the two. Where a retail license operates, it has to be linked to a site. There are specific conditions pertaining to each type of a license. I'll speak to the manufacturing license to begin with. A manufacturing license must remain a going concern at all times. A licensed manufacturer may only manufacture petroleum products within the maximum design capacity stated on each license. For each manufacturing license that we issue, there has to be a number of barrels or liters that they are going to produce per capacity of their refinery. A licensed manufacturer must maintain working stock levels in compliance with applicable regulations, and if so instructed by the controller, which is more in terms of compliance, that the necessary the instructions for which are necessary for the regulation of the petroleum products, instructions on the petroleum products sold and crude oil stored during the period specified in the instruction, the stock level maintained by the manufacturer, the progress in complying with the objectives of the charter, carry any other instruction at all times from the controller, comply with the charter, submit the information set out in Regulation 18, which states that it's every year at the end of, before the end of February, the manufacturer must submit information with a declaration that the ownership of the license activity hasn't changed, the volumes of each type of petroleum products manufactured, the volume sold to licensed wholesalers or licensed retailers, the volumes of types of products, petroleum product purchased from other manufacturers or licensed wholesalers, the number of employees by race, gender, and disability, progress updated then in compliance with the objectives of the charter that I've already mentioned, and also the training that has been offered to the employees. Then the next license conditions that I'll be dealing with is the wholesale license. It must always remain a going concern as well. And a wholesale license must purchase petroleum products only in bulk from other licensed wholesalers or licensed manufacturers, except in the case of importation of petroleum products. In the case of petroleum products sold in the Republic of South Africa, except in the case of liquefied petroleum gas and paraffin, only selling bulk. Here there's a little bit of a leeway for LPG and paraffin that the wholesale can also sell to the to the general public. Then it can also buy from the manufacturer that have already sold. And then if he sells to an end user for own consumption, that has to be in writing. Then we have an exception, except in the case of liquefied petroleum gas and paraffin, make use of a business practice, method of trading, agreements, arrangement, scheme, or understanding, which will result in a wholesaler holding a retail license except for training purposes. There are wholesalers who obviously have to, have a network of retailers where they can own a site specifically to train the people who are going to get into the retail space. The wholesaler must also comply with the charter and also with the regulation 17, and also submit information, as I've already mentioned, with the under manufacturers that we need information on an annual basis before the end of February, around the volumes that they have sold, the declaration that they haven't had any changes in terms of ownership, the training of staff, the importations that they could have made, the minimum stock that they have kept, and also pay the annual fees as in Annex B, which is 1,000 per annum. They must also allow any person authorized by the controller, this is compliance, just in the event that they need to check that the wholesaler comply with the conditions of the wholesale, and at all times comply with the act and this regulation and carry out illegitimate instructions from the controller. This is more with the compliance from the controller. That they have to comply with the Act and these regulations, carry out the legitimate instructions from the controller. The conditions with regard to retailing license, the licensed retailer must remain a going concern at all times and must retail from a specified site, purchase products from a licensed wholesaler or a licensed manufacturer. A licensed retailer must inform the controller in writing of any change of address or telephone number within 30 days of the relevant changes taking effect, pay the annual license fees as determined by Annex B, which is about 500 rand every year, comply with the charter, supply information in terms of Regulation 28. This information is in relation to the data that they haven't, the ownership hasn't changed. The volumes that they have bought from the licensed wholesalers or licensed retailers, the training that they have offered to their employees, and also to carry any other legitimate instructions from the controller, and also to supply information necessary for regulation of the petroleum products, and the data of the product purchased or sold during the specified period. This is more on the compliance side of things. And they must also comply with the objectives of the charter. A retail license must always display the license where any person entering the site may read it. And also a corresponding site license must be prominently displayed at the place of business where the person is trading. A licensed retailer must not allow a self-service by consumers of petroleum products on the premises of the licensed retailer. A licensed retail is not transferable. And then the next slide that I'll be talking to is with regard to statistical indicators. We have taken information from 2012 to 2020 just to have a feel of what has evolved over the years. We have to date licensed six manufacturers, which are in terms of conversions, which would be mostly the major oil companies. We have the new to industry licenses, which are in respect of newcomers doing the pyrolysis, people converting old tires into either fuel, diesel or heavy fuel, or some converting plastic into fuel. That's where the new industry is coming from. It's not to mean that there are new refineries, 50 that we have already approved. No, it's a very small operation, but they are in the wholesale space. I mean, in the manufacturing space. And then under the wholesale, we have 229 that we have approved in conversion. And now one can see over the years that we now have 2,523, which the DDG has already spoken about, that we have a lot of applicants coming through for wholesale, but you know, very few are active in the market. This is a very worrying trend, but you know, if a person applies, you have to abide by the law. We've got 4,190 conversions. These were any conversions. These were licenses or retailers or wholesalers or manufacturers who were in operation before the Act was promulgated in 2006. And then we have to date licensed new to industry. New to industry, that means new developments and new filling stations that have been developed from scratch, We have 886 that are now being approved. In terms of transformation, under the manufacturers, we've got 8 which have been issued, and of which 4 of them are now well transformed up to about 50%. We've got wholesalers of 2,258, 2,081 thereof are 91 are ADSA compliant, which is the percentage of 91.28. We've got retailers that have been issued at 1,410, and 1,138 thereof are in compliance with the charter, of which we have achieved an 80.71%. What we have applications in progress to date, we've got new applications pending information. That means applications that have been launched, but there are still other information that we still require to process the application. We've got 183 in the system, and we have other applications without outstanding supporting information, which are also still in progress. It's work in progress there. We have already assigned 658 applications, which we are working on, that will soon be decisions will be made whether they are being granted or not. And I thank you. This is slides that I've got. Thank you, sir.
Chair, thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Sposa. I will proceed, Chair, with your permission to the next presentation, and I'm mindful of the time. So I will proceed with a bit of speed. If I can request Ms. Direro to fly the presentation, please. Next slide, please. So effectively, what I will be presenting on is the process in terms of the MPRDA that gives us the mandate to regulate the minerals and petroleum sector. And by petroleum here, I mean the downstream sector, I mean the upstream sector, not the one that Mr. Tosa has just responded to. So we have 3 really pieces of legislation that mandate us. The first one being the MPRDA, as I've indicated. Then we also do our work in terms of the National Environmental Management Act and regulations, the Mining Titles Registration Act, read with the Mining Titles Registration Amendment Act and Regulation. If we move on to the types of applications that we adjudicate as a department, so we do have the prospecting rights that is issued that we have to adjudicate, and then the mining rights, which I will explain, the mining permits. And there is something that we overlook, which is the authorization of borrow pits. And that, again, I will explain as I proceed. Next slide, please. So if we go to the first one, in terms of the law, and this is taken directly from the Act, any person who wants to conduct prospecting to determine whether there is a mineral or not, they must then apply in terms of Section 16 of the MPRDA, and simultaneously They must then apply for an environmental authorization in terms of the environmental impact assessment regulations of 2014. And it is very important that this application must be made in the regional office where the land, subject of an application is situated. So you cannot go and apply for a prospecting right in the Northern Cape and go and apply it for it in the Western Cape. That basically becomes an automatic no-no. So also there must be then the requisite payment of the application fee. Now the Act also prescribes what the manager must do and the timelines linked to that, and which is why then the issue of the hump comes in. So this must be, each application must be accepted if the requirements of the Act as prescribed are met, and that no other person holds the prospecting right, mining permit, retention permit for the same mineral on the same piece of land. And that we need to make sure from our side that there's been no prior application for prospecting right, mining right, or mining permit, or retention permit on the same piece of land. Now, before I move to the next slide, what do we have to do all of this? We basically have a team in each region. So all of these applications are basically evaluated at the region, and recommendations are made from the region. So each region has got a regional manager who oversees all the activities of the office. That person is assisted by specialists in mine economics, also in environmental management, also assisted by specialists in mineral laws, as well as those who look after the social and labor plan. So for each of the applications that I'm going to go through, the regional manager must then be assisted by these specialists that exist in each region, and they all report to the regional manager. Next slide, please. So if the application, this is the prospecting right now, and this I must say is applicable throughout to all the applications, the regional manager must notify the applicant within 14 days. The Act is very clear of the decision. And if the application complies with the Act, the regional manager must then also within that 14 days direct the applicant to submit an environmental report within 60 days of the date of the signature of the regional manager. Now, that is where I believe for the issue of the backlog that originate from, and we will talk to that later on. Chairperson, honorable members, this process for mining rights, which is on the next slide, if you can proceed to that. Okay, effectively the process for a mining right is similar, except that the requirements are fairly, stringent, but also that the section of the Act that is applicable is a different one. So you can just repeat the same processes that I had gone through, but they are basically prescribed in different sections of the MPRDA. So this section for mining rights is section 22 of the MPRDA, and the acceptance by the regional manager is in terms of Section 22.2 of the MPRDA, and effectively the requirements are as I have indicated previously. So in the interest of time, I wouldn't want to go through that. If you can go to the mining permit. So the difference then between a mining right and a mining permit is that the mining permit is granted or is applied for by somebody who believes that within a period of 2 years, they can be able to mine, but also they can do so within an area of 5 hectares. Whereas the mining right, effectively, a person can be granted for a period of up to 30 years. But for mining permits, it's 2 years, and the area is also restricted. In terms of the application process, it is a similar process. However, as I have indicated, it's a different section of the Act, which then prescribes where these applications must be made. Now, the one that I thought I should talk to, which is not necessarily on the slide, is an issue that is very close to local government, and that is the one of authorizing borrow pits. Now, borrow pits effectively are excavations that are done, and these excavations are done in order to assist in the construction of roads. Mainly, it is to excavate gravel, it is to excavate sand. So it is not a major process. However, it is an economic activity that has got to be managed, because when that excavation is done, there is potential for environmental damage that is done on the land where this borrow pit is basically situated. And effectively, it is named a borrow pit because you basically take a piece of land from somewhere to use it somewhere else. So you borrow the gravel from, you know, a place in Midrand, and then you basically go and use it to construct a road in Sibukeng, for example. And that is one of the areas that delays actually the construction of road infrastructure. And therefore, as a branch, we have to make sure that we're in a position to facilitate that as soon as possible, but also as efficiently as possible. Next slide, please. This is the slide that I thought maybe we should introduce the issue of timeframes. I've already spoken to the issue of 14 days, and these are prescribed in law. And I must say upfront that to a large degree, there are complaints from the public that we do not stick to the timeframes. And this has been exacerbated in the last year by the fact that we could not do any activity for a period of 3 to 4 months. And that has made the issue worse. But I must also admit that the challenge was there even before. It has just gone worse now. And this is the process that we are seized with to try and turn around. The timelines for the EIA on the third column are as indicated. Again, for prospecting and mining rights, it's 247 working days within which the process must be concluded. Now, I think it is also important to indicate that these timelines basically are based on certain assumptions. And the assumptions are that the issue of REMDEC, and REMDEC is basically a regional management structure that over departments, both from national government as well as from local government and provincial government. Now, that structure is the one that oversees appeals, and if there is an appeal, then effectively the clock does grind to a halt. So that is something that maybe is hidden from the public, that if then there are these objections, then the timeline will most probably then be exceeded. But we do not want to make excuses and say that the reason we have a backlog currently timelines, and I will count the slide. On the next slide, I will just show the number of applications per province. Can we go to the next slide? Than any other province on both the prospecting as well as the mining rights. And of course, if we go to the next slide, the Mpumalanga accounts for the biggest number of applications that we define as the backlog. And the backlog basically means that the application described in law.
Now, there is a back and forth in terms of the promotion of administrative justice that takes place between an applicant and effectively the regional manager. Now, that process will also depend on the response by the applicant in terms of making sure that if the regional manager requires information, you know, in a particular number of days, if the applicant does not respond, then we're unable to and then proceed with the processing of that application. But at the same time, we need to be reasonable in terms of the time that we give to meetings, particularly of community members, because of the lockdown. And I believe that this has exacerbated the situation over and above the fact that we do have weaknesses of our own in terms of the operating model that we have to work to overcome. The other issue is that in terms of the social and labor plan, there are effectively consultations that become very difficult to convene in the COVID environment. And I think that is an area that we need to then change the way we do things, because consultation is mandated by law. But if we are not able to convene a certain number of people, then that is going to have an impact on the ability to conclude. Now, coming back closer to internally, the issue of tools of trade, I think it is important that we need to state this upfront, that we do have a challenge in some of the regions with tools of trade, and that talks to myself directly, that I cannot expect regional managers to provide those tools of trade. We need to make sure that from headquarters, every region has got the necessary tools of trade. We've had, for example, a dispute with a supplier of printers, a legal dispute which is still being resolved. That has had an impact. I'm just giving one example. Has had an impact on the work of the region. The other one is that of critical posts. I spoke to the mine economists as well as the environmental management specialists in the region. It is our view that those posts have got to be filled. Now, we had a difficult 12 months because before we concluded the merger of the two departments, there was a view that we should not accelerate the filling of vacancies because we don't want any of the existing members of the department to be excess staff. So as much as possible, we wanted to make sure that those that are within the system, if they have the requisite skills and qualifications, they then get accommodated in the various areas of the department. Then the issue of appeals, I really want to perhaps indicate here that, excuse me, if I don't get a prospecting right in an area that I had wanted, and Mr. N or Mr. M gets it, then
me as Mr. T, I'm going to appeal. And sometimes some of these appeals, in our view, are frivolous. They appear frivolous. And when you appeal, there is nothing that can happen. We have a number of appeals currently where companies cannot mine because there is an appeal. And I think it is something that we need to apply ourselves, our minds to say, you know, what do you do with frivolous appeals? And I'm saying this guardedly, but it is something that I believe is mischief that is happening. And it is something that we, as part of our turnaround plan, we are going to have to focus on. Now, the appeals, they appeal the decision of our branch. So they don't appeal to the branch. They appeal to higher authority. So they will appeal to the DG. If they fail with the DG, they then appeal to the minister. Now, during all of that, there will be no activity. There will be no prospecting activity, and there will be no mining activity. And that basically impacts on economic activity. Now, in terms of the challenges, I think we've had situations where there's been continuous acting. As I indicated, now that the process of merging the two departments has been completed, DG directed that by the 31st of March of this year, all critical vacancies must be filled. And the chief directors are busy with that process in the various regions currently. One region that we are looking at is KZN. The recruitment process is underway there. In terms of Mpumalanga, I must indicate that there is an official there whose disciplinary process is still ongoing. So in terms of the leadership in that region, we still have that a vacuum because of that pending disciplinary process. Now, there is a tendency, and this is a culture issue internally that we intend to deal with, data on SAMRAD by some of us is basically not loaded. And it is a culture issue. We need to change that. That's the first one. But linked to that is that SAMRAD needs to be available all the time. And the reality is that that is not the case. So officials also get frustrated when the system is down. But I think it's a culture issue. One, we need to make sure that the system is available. Secondly, when it's available, people must load the information. I think the issue of consequence management, we must be honest about it, that in some instances, we've delayed disciplinary action, and this is an area that we want to focus on. The COVID pandemic, I think, has had an impact, as I have indicated. I've spoken to the network connectivity. We need to improve our admin. I think the record keeping, generally, our observation is that it is an area that we need to focus on. Now, in terms of going forward, we are saying that we have started with this process to say, let's look at each activity and say, how long does it take? But also, we cannot treat Mpumalanga the same as we treat in Eastern Cape, for example, because of the volume of application. Therefore, you can't say that you will have the same number of officials in the provinces. So we'll have to bolster those provinces where the work is, where there's a huge volume of work. And then the multi-skilling, I think it is something that we have to look at going forward. One observation we have made is that effectively, a lot of our colleagues are basically highly qualified, which is a good thing to have. However, what we are battling with here is exposure to industry. And this is something that we'll have to see how we manage that, because you need both. You need the qualifications, but also then exposure to the how actually a mine operates. We need to improve our system. We've assigned a chief director to basically work on reducing the timelines. Our aim is to reduce our timelines by 50%, and that is work that is currently underway. SAMRAD, the development, I think, is necessary. Then the issue of the continuous acting, I've dealt with that, and the issue of the supply of tools of trade. And then a review, as I indicated, of the structure of the regional offices, whether they are able to respond to the challenges that we have. Now, one of the things that I thought maybe as I conclude, is to say that on the petroleum side, we have introduced a system. So we have a system there called the Petroleum Products Licensing System. And that system is basically, one could say, homegrown. And we've been adding to that system incrementally. The system now is able to send SMSs effectively to all the applicants to indicate where the application is. And basically, SMS costs us 16 cents. And we believe that this is something that we can, in terms of feedback to applicants, we can also export or import on the mineral side as well. The petroleum side as well is moving into paperless system between headquarters and the regions. And this is something we'll eventually get to. So, Chair and Honourable Members, in conclusion, I must say that we must admit that we have a backlog. However, we have a plan that we're developing to deal with it. With that, thank you very much. Over to you, DG. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG Makubela, and the Chief Director for the two presentations. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, I know that we are supposed to move to the next presentation. That is the presentation on NERSA. Our apologies. In fact, I just need to be upfront here to highlight that we should have presented this at the beginning when we started with the meeting. We did highlight that NERSA will make a presentation. However, NERSA at the moment is busy with public consultations because we wanted NERSA to be in this meeting to take honorable members through the presentations in terms of the licensing regime within NERSA. But with your indulgence, Chair, well, will be directed by your ruling on the matter. We can be available, we'll check, I mean, because this program was long planned. I know that you have also planned this program a long time ago. And so we would like to apologize for that, but we will hear from you in terms of your guidance and direction. But this then brings us to the end of the detailed presentation, your presentations from DDG Makubela. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, DG, and your colleagues for the presentation. I'm looking at the time, honorable members. I want to say that it's going to be a very long meeting, this one. But if it's short, it will be a surprise to me. But let me start by saying, DG, whether NERSA was here or not, with all due respect, they were not going to present. The procedure is simple, and we have said that is that members at least must receive documents 24 hours before the start of that meeting. So except if I'm the only one, I've not seen any documents from NERSA. And just in future, even if there has to be an account of why those documents have not been received 24 hours at least before the committee meeting. So even if they were here, they were not going to make any presentation. Lucky that we sometimes do virtual meetings. If it was the old normal, we would have said even if they fly to Cape Town, we would tell them that they must go back, because as members, we must read the document. We must have clarity of purpose on the document. So I don't want us to take too long. Now I hear Mr. Kola is saying that you will see. Maybe you'll start from the tail, Mr. Kola. I said this only got the tail end. It's okay. Honorable members, without any further ado, I know there are gaps, DG. Let me just say now, there are gaps because we also forwarded you the letters which were giving a procedure. They are about, if I were to put it crudely, the behavior, conduct of the personnel in the department, actions of people. The presentation, there would be responses, including the ones that were referred to the speaker. Well, I know the speaker has also written to the department to respond on those issues. So I hope as we move on, you will be able to relook on the questions sent to you and be able to respond to them. As an example, I'm not saying they could be all, but the response to me does not seem to be taking into cognizance that there are issues that are purely personal in terms of the human conduct. But I will need to finish. But if members, they take a lot of time, I'll have to then allow the department to come in. I see the hand of Honorable Masaule. I see the hand of Honorable Lorema. I see the hand of Honorable Volmarans. I see the hand of Sis Valencia. So it's going to be Honorable Masaule, Honorable Lorema, Honorable Volmarans, Honorable Malinga. I won't come back. I'll come back only if I'm stopping you. Continue, Honorable Masaule. Let me say also, I got a notice that the Honorable Sungula has to go and attend another committee, which is small business, which was starting, I think, at 10. That's why he's not here. Welcome, Honorable Mylam. Honorable Masaule, continue.
Thank you very much, Chair. Greetings to you. Greetings to honorable members. Greetings to the department led by Advocate Mukwena. and greetings to the staff of Parliament. Chair, I think the last point you made is exactly why we are having this meeting. When Mr. Sitosa was presenting, he emphasized more on what you need to comply with to get whatever license you are applying for, which is well and good. However, the reason why we are here is that in most cases, people comply with everything that is written and they are supposed to comply with, but they do not get the responses that they need. Because if for 14 days a manager must have given a response and they don't give a response, it's not the person who applied that did not comply. And if they did not comply, they should be informed that you did not comply. You need to bring this document, or you need to comply with this and that. It's not happening in regional offices. And I agree with both Makubele and Stosa that there may be challenges with the regional managers, but that's exactly what we need to confront. We can't continue with this situation. It just can't be a normal day in DMRE. There are also naughty officials. Mr. Makubele said there are others that are naughty. You find that there's an application made by Masaule, and deliberately Kula makes the same application just to complicate the issue. There are also naughty officials who can take an issue from one process to the other before they speak to the 12th person who made an application. And we know what normally the discussion is all about. And it gets delayed because that discussion doesn't go the way an official wants it to go. And that's basically what we're confronted with in that regard. Of course, there would be disputes, problems. Let us be told how many are those that have problems and how are they resolved. Because if you are a manager, Mr. Makubele, as far as I know, there are requirements in one of the requirements is problem and dispute resolution. You can't have an endless problem that you don't know how to resolve it. There must be a way in which you resolve a problem. And if it can't be resolved, that is why you have DG, what you call the legal section in any department. That's where it comes in, to assist in resolving the problem. But you can't put an application aside and say, hey, this is a problem, and let me deal with the ones that are not. You must resolve the problem. Otherwise, we will have these problems piling up until your 100 and your 1,000 and something, like I saw in Mpumalanga. Coming to Mpumalanga, Chair, when I made a request that we must look at this issue urgently, I had a concern about Mpumalanga, Limpopo, and KwaZulu-Natal. In the presentation, it shows that Northwest and Northern Cape also have problems. Not so much about KZN in terms of the backlog, but I want to give a perspective of why I brought the issue of KZN as a problem too, irrespective of the numbers that are demonstrated there. You see, Chair, the reality is that in South Africa, you have what we call racism. You also have what you call tribalism. And for a lack of a better word or structure, in the phenomenon that I'm going to speak about. I don't know what you call that, but you will understand. If a Sotho person and a Zulu person have attitudes towards each other, be it because one wants to stay somewhere, it's called tribalism. I don't know when you have an Indian, a colored, and an African are treating each other in a discriminatory way, what do you call it? But I want to talk about that phenomenon in case of that. And I want to challenge Mr. Makubelo to say, in the applications that are still in a backlog, go and check the racial parties, and for a lack of a better word, because we're all called blacks, in that blackness, go and check the structure of how the applications are rejected, the reasons why they are rejected, and probably get a sense of what is happening in KwaZulu-Natal. I raised that point of KwaZulu-Natal in that regard, because there have been reports that there is that element where blacks in their entirety target each other, but at the end, an African is discriminated. That's the point I want you to look at, Chair. I think some of the things Mr. Makubela tried to answer them. The issue of transformation, especially in the petroleum sector, the same issue I want to raise now is the same issue I'm raising, racial discrimination. Can we get a breakdown of the good work that you are reporting, Mr. Makubela, that you have reached transformation at this level? I saw the numbers are nice. Can we have a breakdown of a black people, meaning you break them down into saying African, Indian, colored, and then you say white, and then you come again and say females and males, so that we understand whether when you talk about transformation, what is it that you're talking about? Because there is a new phenomenon of discrimination in South Africa, and we must nip in the bud as and when it raises its ugly head. Thank you very much.
Good day, DG. Long time no talk. I have a number of questions. This is a very important topic. I've got about 14 with sub-questions on them, so I hope your team has sharp pencils. I'm going to start with slide 11, number of applications per province. This is useful, but because it covers such a long time period since the commencement of the NPRDA, it's not that useful. We need to know, question one, how many of these have been granted? Question two, how many of them are currently functional and compliant? Question three, how many of them have been relinquished by the holder or have been removed from the holder? Question four, how many have been accepted but neither granted nor refused? Now, this is quite an interesting category because it's people who exist in a twilight. The application has been accepted, but it still remains in process. Moving to the next slide, the backlog, it doesn't really give us enough detail here. It would be interesting to know how many of these backlogged applications have not been processed. It would be interesting to know how many of them haven't been dealt with by the department versus how many of them are because the applicants have been dragging their feet and unable to secure rehabilitation guarantees or financing in another way. It seems there's no date by when the granted application lapses. Can you tell me whether that's correct or not? So if the applicant does drag their feet, it seems they can sit on those rights and they can sterilize them and stop anybody else developing them. So I'd like to know whether you think this is a problem. If you do think it's a problem, what are you going to do about it? If you don't think it's a problem, please explain why you don't think it's a problem. Throughout this whole licensing process, there is a complete lack of transparency. And this may give space for corruption to flourish. What would be useful would be for the department to undertake to publish details on its website of all granted mining rights, permits and prospecting rights and retention permits, and if it could do that every quarter. I'd like to know if that's possible and if you're prepared to do that. It should be simple if SAMRAD was functioning, but SAMRAD doesn't seem to be functioning, and I'll come back to that in a moment. Next question is, why does it take so long to process the renewal of a prospecting right? All the work's been done on the initial application, so it should merely be an administrative process. Yet I know of major companies who've reported that it's taken them 7 or even 10 years to get a renewal. So are you tracking this? Because the implication, again, is that a company can drag its feet and sit on mining and prospecting rights. Moving to exploration funding, figures have been given for how much exploration funding there is. I'd be very interested to know how the department keeps track of exploration funding. Does it publish these figures anywhere? In the case where an applicant hasn't spent any money on their exploration program, does the department cancel prospecting rights? And how many has it cancelled in each of the last few years? I realize you might not have that data at your fingertips, but I'm sure you could give me some examples. Moving to the slide then entitled Challenges. Now, the minister took over the department 2 years ago, and then you say there's still a problem in regional leadership. Whose fault is this? Is this the minister's fault or is this the department's fault? I'd be very interested to hear your answer on that. We have already seen that there's a problem in the Mpumalanga office in eMalahleni. Now, this has become very well typified by a case that I've come across dealing with the department losing in court late last year when it defended the issuing of a mining permit on the farm Borsmanspoort next to the Optimum Colliery. The permit was issued without the farmer's knowledge and on a wetland, and the area mined was not the area specified in the permit. This was complained about to the police and to the department in eMalahleni, who were not interested. It appears there was no inspection. If there was no inspection, it was incompetent. So I wonder how many more of these there are out there. But on this case, it seems the DG accepts that the Mpumalanga office is dysfunctional. So aside from, we're going to do something about it, I'd like to know what you're going to do and by when. Because this situation has carried on for a very long time. And we can't just carry on talking about it. And specifically, I'd like to know on this Borsmanspoort case, does the department think there's a problem with the way the license was issued? And if so, is it going to take action against the official involved? The same slide talks about limited or no consequence management. Why not? What's the problem? Is the problem that you're just not a functional department, or are you limited in the action that you can take by the Labor Relations Act? If that is the case, have you engaged with the Department of Labor? And if not, why not? Coming to the tools of the trade excuse. I hear it. I don't buy it. The department has had a year. What are the other tools of trade that you can't work with? It can't just be printers. Is it laptops? Is it connectivity? Much of the work of the department should be able to be done from home. But we've had a year and you're still having a problem? I don't buy that. Please explain. Let me come back to SAMRAD. I first came onto this portfolio about 9 years ago. 8 years ago, I started asking about SAMRAD. And for the first 5 years, I was told, quite frankly, nonsense about how SAMRAD was functioning. It isn't functional. And as we've just heard, it isn't even functional for members of the department. let alone people trying to make applications. And yet we see in this presentation that SAMRAD is going to be developed further. Now, about 3 years ago, the department stopped denying that SAMRAD was broken and admitted, yes, that it was broken. Are we being told now that this completely dysfunctional system is going to be have more money put in it and being fixed? It amazes me that as an ordinary person, I can go onto any piece of land in Mozambique and Kenya, and I can see the situation with mining rights there. I can see who holds the rights, are they prospecting rights? I can see everything. Nobody can do that in South Africa. And they haven't been able to do that for years. And yet now we're being told SAMRAD is going to be developed. So the crisp question, is it the department's intention merely to fix SAMRAD, or will it be scrapped? Does it have budget to do this? And will SAMRAD be replaced by a functional and transparent system? And by when will the process be complete? Thank you very much.
Thanks once more, Chair. I welcome the presentations once more. And because of a number of questions and or comments that have been done by Honorable Mahlaule, including Honorable Lorimar, I would just take a few, because some of them would be being repeated. The first one would be the on the petroleum process, Chair. There's four slides, which I would just like to zoom into: the slide 24, slide 25, 26, and 27. They relate to more of the stats that you were given. I just wanted to check or request that given the numbers that we see there, can those numbers be broken down per province? What are the stats per province? That is on 24. The same would apply to slide 25, which gives the transformation indicator per province. I mean, it gives a general transformation indicator. Can we also have that per province? And you would see that number 26 and 27 are just also showing what has been disapproved, what are the reasons, and so on. If that can also be broken down per province, to give us an indication of where we need to zoom in and where we need to appreciate what work is done around those areas. I wanted to check on the same process for the petroleum, the interaction with stakeholders, like the owners of these big brands, where you have the renewal of licenses. And at in some instances, we hear that renewals cannot be taking place. I don't know whether is it from the owner of these big companies or is it from ourselves as a department in relation to the transformation agenda, if an explanation can be given there or highlighted. On the mining license regime, there is also a number of issues that I agree with the questions raised by Honorable Mahlaule and Honorable Lorimar. And on slide 14, if you go to slide 14, which deals with the critical posts that are not yet been filled, the likelihood is that they are budgeted for. And the explanation is that when the amalgamation was taking place, there was some reasoning that we must not get rid of anybody so that the post can interface and the people can be placed. And it seems this is taking quite some time, it's taking long, or it cannot be expedited. And it is for that reason that you see from your own presentation that we have a lot of backlogs. So the question of the appeals that are taking long is just a direct result from the presentation of the personnel that is not yet hired. The disputes that take long is also attributed to such. So can we get a direction of whether we should not look in terms of what our needs are, as opposed to wait for the entire integration of the department so that we can take Paul, we take him to that other department and bring him with whatever resources got into this the new department to expedite the critical filling of posts. If they will be done and expedited, why don't we go direct and start procuring personnel? There's a lot of unemployment, and people, I think, with required backgrounds can also be looked into filling this post. What is the plan of the department or the division with regards to this? The presenter also puts it that there are DC processes which are being delayed or which are taking long or are not necessarily being taken up. Could we be provided with such cases? A short summary of such cases, the number of incidents, also break it down to per province. It is in that regard you would see which province or which regional office is actually deep into where we are saying that the personnel might be naughty here and there. I would also want to find out what does it cost the department, the country, or the division around such cases which we are busy dealing with, internal cases of your disciplinary processes. The last one, Chair, are there any cases that we are at litigation within this division or department? If such are there, can we also be provided with them so that we can be taken into confidence? Where are we, which division, which area in the country are we having all this type of litigations, either for or against us, and at what cost? Because much of the delays are happening around your appeals, your disputes, and the critical posts that have not been filled. And I think it's an area that you would want to zoom into in order to assist the division to proceed. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings again to yourself. And let me welcome the presentation, Chairperson, that we've just received now. Chairperson, I'm really disappointed at this presentation. I'm not sure what is happening, DG. Maybe COVID has caught up with you guys. This presentation is bad. How do you bring, because I want to zoom straight into the slides where you're talking about your challenges. You see, Chairperson, I want to drum what my other colleagues have just said. You have people who are not doing their work, but you are delaying disciplinary processes. Why? What is it that these people who are not doing their work have against the people who are supposed to discipline them? Chairperson, they talk about there is a bullet there somewhere, Guma challenges, where they talk about COVID-19, working from home. Working from home, are there no timelines that people need to adhere to? That by this time, as you work from home, this is the work that is needed from you. And if that person is not delivering on the work, what is the consequence? but they again say there is no consequence management. Why pay people who do not do their work? As for the regional office in Mpumalanga, you know I'm from Mpumalanga. But let me welcome what Mr. Makubela, I think it's Mr. Makubela, who said at least the DG is now coming closer to the space. This should have happened long time ago, Chair. That office is not working. The regional director there, our Chair, they need to really, really do their work. The issue of tools of trade. This department came as a merger of two departments. Were there no tools of trade in both these departments? Were there no laptops? The people who were working in mineral resources and people who were working in energy, they did not have any laptops, any printers, any... You can't be bringing such to us. To me, this is just a rush job that you said, we know that politicians, they don't read, they don't go through the documents. Then you come and try and bribe us with your politeness. Yeah, no, you're doing a very, very bad job as supervisors of these people. How, if your regional offices are not functioning, surely, that means even the head office is not functioning, DG. And if you don't put your knee on the heads of these DDGs, of these regional managers, on these chief directors, we are still going to have such reports, Chair. Chairperson, lastly, there was a slide where they were explaining that there are a lot of wholesalers, but they are not active. What's happening there? And what do they intend to do with that, Chair? The issue of SAMRA, Chair. You know, everybody these days has unless ukanga upetelefone upopop. Everybody now has a smartphone, and I believe that there is also cell phone allowance in the department. The people can't use their cell phones to do these SAMRA things and that form. I really don't understand this, Chair. And LRA, Chair, if a person does not work, you give them verbal warnings, you go with the processes, and this department has a law firm. No, you must check the skills of the people you have, DG, there who have legal backgrounds as an advocate. No, we can't have such, Chair. So I am very disappointed, Chair. I want to concur with my colleague, Honorable Volmaran, in terms of critical skills. Vacant posts that have not been filled. Why are these posts not filled? After a year, these departments have come together. What is the holdup? Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Mashaule, and not that I'm underestimating what other honorable members have raised. Honorable Mashaule and Honorable Lorima, your inputs for me, they are running short of saying what I think I've observed. And I'm trying to test waters with yourselves. If you agree, I'm looking at the time, it's 22, whether we'll really get these answers that we want. But the DG can respond. But I think some of these things, they require more of a beefing up of the presentation that they have made in response to some of these issues that you are raising. For instance, Honorable Lorema, you are correct on the SAMRAT system. In my view, it's not just whether you scrap it up or you make an investment or what. It's also critical that we don't see whether what is being suggested is even a thought, and what could be the detailed explanation on the efficiency of that system. So I'm tempted to say, in as much as I might give the department, I was of the view that, which I was going to raise later, that it seems even those entities that now we're told the AG has dealt with them, the outcomes are out. I want to test from the committee. The outcomes are out. They have not tabled. Now I was working around whether can't we take and say, even if, so that if we don't finish here, the department must come back again next week. Take into consideration now the issues that were raised. That's why I was raising, because the points that members are raising to me, they say, to be honest, there is not enough of what is given here, including DG, a written response that is given on the letters that were sent. This to me is a little bit of line of what is the genuine concern that is being made. For instance, in the report, there's nothing that is contained that says when you were still mineral resources, not in it. For instance, if we come to the mineral side, there was an intervention, an investigation that was subjected to a number of these offices, specifically Mpumalanga, if I'm not mistaken, and Limpopo and Northwest. I don't get a sense here. What was it? Why? How far did that go? And what was it that was discovered? Because there was a suspicion that there was a manipulation of the system by some within the department. And the worry that I have is that, unfortunately, the bugs stops with you as a chief accounting officer at an administrative level. When people are complaining, for instance, you said there has to be clarity which cases the department, when it has granted the right, is prepared to go to court and defend that right that it has granted, and which ones it feels that you grant the right and you don't go to court and defend that. The point that Honorable Lorima is raising, it might be nice to say the backlogs from which time they stand. 2020, how many mining rights and prospecting rights and so forth were applied for? How many were processed? What happened? Who, from the point of an application, where does it go? And from that person, where does it go? So that we can know where you say now there is a delay on undermining the legislation on 14 days. Who is this person who has got so much power to ignore the legislation and say, I'm going to be paid, although there's an application that was put on the 1st of the month. Now it's 14 days later, on the 15th, I'll get my salary when I have not done anything with regards to that application. But I don't want, because I would have loved that we go into details on these issues so that even from where we sit as a committee point of view, we can be able to make or take it, well, we don't take decision, make a recommendation of what we think has to be done and what do we think as a committee we need to do in order to fix this matter. So can I first check with honorable members whether will we be doing injustice?
Yes, Mr. Chair, from my part, I would welcome a full session just on this. As you point out, there are a lot of questions that need answering. Okay. And if we could do it,
no, I'm saying next week, Wednesday.
Perfect.
Is there any seconder to that view?
Yes, Chair.
Yes,
okay.
Chair.
We second, Chair.
Okay. DJ, you can answer. I'm doing it so that if the time is against us, then we know that Sinombeko. Okay. DJ?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Let me welcome the questions. They are quite constructive, the Chair, in terms of enhancing the work that we are doing as the department. I'll invite DDG Maqubela, then I'll wrap up. At the end, I've taken note of the critical questions that have been asked to the branch. And so DDG Maqhubela, if you may come in and you can delegate to the chief director where it is necessary to do so, then I'll come in there. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you very much, DG. And thanks to the honorable members for the comments and questions. I think firstly, just to say that it was not our intention not to be candid, if I can put it that way. We wanted to come to this committee and say that we have done a diagnosis, we have a problem, and we are going to deal with it. The problem, though, is going to require that we have a concerted effort, and I think it is important that the committee holds us to account on what we are saying. Maybe the first one is to say that the issue of the NOTI officials, I think we have also been hearing this Honorable Mashaule, but what we have done on the petroleum side, let me just give that as an example. We had two NOTI officials here. Both of those officials are no longer in the public service. One took us to labor court and lost. The other one is in the process of taking us to labor court. So wherever we found NOTI officials, we've dealt with them. Now, we will apply the same principle throughout the branch, and that is what we can commit to. Of course, we do miss some of them, but members of the community, they raise those issues and were able to catch and deal with them. The issue of the racial breakdown, I must say that it is spot on, and I intend to be candid. When we talk about historically disadvantaged South Africa, the Petroleum Products Act effectively also includes in that historically disadvantaged South African white females. So I must be upfront that in that number, there is a portion of white females that we need to account for. But I think as indicated by the chair, we can bring those figures at the next opportunity. The other reality is that on the retail side, the vast majority of beneficiaries of transformation program are our Indian compatriots. And that is the reality of the situation on the petroleum retail side, countrywide. So it's not a provincial matter. The conversation we've had with the oil companies is one of saying, but it cannot be that, let's give an example, that you hardly ever find a retailer within the black community of a colored person in the Western Cape. It can be correct. But this is a conversation that we've had with them, and we've said this needs to change. Now, what the decision that they have taken, and it's an uphill battle, but they have taken it, is to say that effectively in the next 5 years, they will then commit to using the economically active population wherever the opportunity arises for them to renew a retail site. That is going to be the way that they're going to help us in terms of a transformation. I think the other detailed question, I think we would request that we come back, because we wouldn't want to guess in terms of what the numbers are. Maybe if I can say that I think that the issue of transparency, as was raised by Honorable Member Lorimer, it is a goal on our side, but what we need to do is that we have data that we need to clean up, and that is the reality. We have to clean up our data, and that process is underway. Even this presentation actually has assisted us, because we're then able to get a much better understanding of the challenge that we are confronted with. So on the specifics, I would request that we be granted an opportunity to either bring those in writing or present them at the next opportunity. The labor issues, I think the consequence management, perhaps maybe the main issue for me is that we've had a dispute in Mpumalanga, and that issue has been going on I think for a while now, and it's high time that we get to the bottom of it, and that is one of those areas where I believe that we have a challenge, and therefore we can't afford not to have a head there. And we will again bring an update on where that process is. The IT system, in terms of tools of trade, I must admit it is an area in the department that the Exco, under the leadership of the DG, is seized with, I don't believe that we're the only ones in our branch who believe that we can do with a more stable IT environment. And however, we are mindful of the fact that that is going to require financial resources. Maybe on the SAMRAT issue, maybe the updating is a choice of words. Because on SAMRAD, my view is that first of all, people must load information as required by the standard operating procedure. And what we have observed is that people are not updating. Now, I must admit that COVID, in this regard, we were not fully prepared to respond, because a lot of our officials work with, I think the issue of the 3Gs and available tools of trade at home is an issue that, we have over time been trying to correct. But at the time at which it happened, not all officials had access to 3G and laptops. And that is something we had to respond to. I think the issue again on the raised by Honorable Volmarans. I think the issue on the oil majors' interaction and the breakdown of numbers,
I've already indicated that we've had the interaction with all majors. The existing retailers are resisting to let go of the site without being paid exorbitant amounts of money for them to vacate and allow somebody else to run the site. But that's a process of negotiation that is currently being undertaken by the oil majors, because we are clear that there must be transformation at retail level. So that, I believe, from the applications we've received recently, we are beginning to see a change in the demographics. Maybe just one issue that the issue of merging two departments, there are issues of labor that you know it was a process that involved a lot of consultation with organized labor, and it was not as smooth in my view as we had expected, but it is behind us now. As of October, you know, the back of the for example, the performance of this branch stops with me. And I must say that we have taken, you know, the challenge, and we will, I'm pretty confident that with the guidance of the DG, these issues will be behind us. In terms of timelines, I wouldn't want to, at this stage, to put a timeline, particularly on the on the issue of the backlog as such. At this stage, to some degree, we are doing as much as we are dealing with the backlog, but we're also doing the diagnostic to say exactly who in the system is causing the most of the delays. Not who as in person, but which component. And we're going to zoom into that component, and then if it needs capacity, give it capacity, and so on. But it's not an open-ended process, but I do want to request that we be given time to come back with a date by which we will have dealt with the backlog. I must apologize to Honorable Malinga that we've brought our own issues that we should have managed, but it was in the process of trying to be candid and to be honest here that these are the challenges, not to say that we are not going to deal with them, and I must again say that we are going to do whatever it takes to make sure that we turn around the situation.
We are left with 2 minutes, Makube.
Okay. Chair, I think at this point I would leave it here, and then request that other issues we can respond to in writing if the DG agrees. Thank
you. DG, we with 1 minute.
Thank you. Okay. I'll try to be very brief, Chair. No, thank you very much, Chair. I think I have highlighted this point, that we have taken note of the comments and also the input from Honorable Malinga and also Honorable Lorima. We will deal with all these issues in our next meeting. Maybe if I can just comment on the issue of critical posts, I can confirm, Chair, that we have started with the process after we have concluded the NMOC process, which we concluded around November last year. We have placed the officials, and we have even advertised close to 60 posts the 1st of March. There will be progress in filling those vacant posts. On the issue of consequence management, we have taken note of that, and the issue of the legal firm will give more details when we come to our next meeting. I must also highlight this point, Chair, that that is the reason why the department took a decision more than 10 years ago of rotating our staff in regional offices to avoid any element of comfortability because some of these officials, when they're too long in those positions, they, you know, end up conniving and doing wrong things, getting involved in corrupt activities. And so these are the matters that we are dealing with in the department. Yes, indeed, as Mr. Makhubela has indicated, that we are even of Mpumalanga Regional Office. Honorable Mika spoke about other regional offices as well. These are the matters that we are dealing with as a department. We will then enhance the presentation. When we come next week, we'll make sure that we give more attention to the issues that you have raised. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Okay, DG, one, make it very sharp. One, let's get a response on the written letters, including the one by in writing, including the one that was sent by the speaker, Stephen, to the speaker's office. When we come next week, two, let's get a graphic exercise that says at a regional level, when the application is made, it goes to, this is how the SANRAC system works. If there is a walk-in, let that walk-in be explained. This is how the system works. You go, so-and-so will receive the application, will take it to so-and-so. Let's say the hierarchy. In the event, who then grants the permit or the right from that person? If then there is a query, there is an appeal, who does that? So that we know what we are talking about. We know whether even the complaints that are being made are genuine. Secondly, how long does it take in each of these exercises? If there is an appeal on a prospecting right, how long should that appeal be handled? And how does it come about? Explain the issue of double or triple DPing. How is it possible that three people can be granted in the same place, in the same area, can be granted a permit or a right, whether prospecting or exploration? And in addition to the issues that honorable members have raised, including the SANRAC system, how does the system work? How do you arrive at a point where you say the system is the best? If the system it is improved, what is the intended reflection of that system after it has been improved? What is it that it seeks to achieve? What is it that it can do? If that is not the case, what is the best system that can be considered? In this world of we talk about 4IR, some of the things that we're talking about, they are not supposed to be there if we're the very effective system. At what point is there an intervention that can be made in the department, and by who and for which intentions that it could be done, and to what extent is that process itself transparent? So I think if we can, we need to go and zoom in into all the issues that, for me, they seem to be the boiling point. What happens if then this thing within that 14 days, Mr. Luzipho has not done his work? Does that become a labor issue when a person, because everyone definitely does have the conditions of employment in front of them. So what is it? Then we need both minerals and petroleum. We need to get the IC. I'm not someone who's a rigid Makhubela. The truth of the matter is that if we are using a system like the SANRAC system, I hear the part of consultation and other things, but that system cannot be affected by the fact that we're working from home. You show us where will it have an impact because we're working from home. But let's also see that, for an example, let's just make how old are some of the outstanding? Because you get people who complain that have been waiting for 4 years. Now, that's why I'm saying the point now, unfortunately, if you come to a committee, and I'm saying this thing, not that I'm protecting you, I'm telling, helping you, including the DG, be careful to come to the committee and defend or present something that you don't want the department to be seen back. That's correct if you feel so. but don't die for other people's sins. Just be careful of that. That the whole issue of the department, if you see what people are seeing, just consider that, hey, we are in trouble here. We are dealing with something that is so difficult because some systems are so endemic to people, to an extent it has become a way of life. Let's just be open and say, so that if you want to say, give us space, we want to go back and do this. If we act this way, here are the challenges. But don't just be careful to come as an accounting officer, both as a DG and a DDG, by the way, including the executive authority, and present something when people see that here there is trouble. And we because now all what is going is going to go direct to you. So give us even that breakdown. From which year, how old, and as an example, from 2016 or 2015, this is how much was processed. 2017, this was how much was processed. Because remember, you also come here, give us targets, give us performance indicators, and what we must give in as a budget. We must know now, when we go to those budget processes, whether do you match what is there? Lastly, let's have at the back of our mind that we are dealing with an economy that is in a state of crisis. If we continue to have these backlogs, actually we are now contributing, instead of contributing on economic growth, we are contributing ourselves on economic decline if there are such backlogs that we are sitting on. The last point on this thing, DG, and give us the reasons why. If we are not, it was your own work when we said, you said, let's give you space. You wanted to deal with the issues very effectively. What transpired out of your investigations on the offices, especially Mpumalanga, if I'm not mistaken, it was Mpumalanga, Limpopo, Northwest, if I'm not mistaken. But I know Mpumalanga and not and Limpopo at some point, you even closed those offices. What made you open those offices? Surely you had made inroads. Or you are still processing internally. If you say you are processing internally, let's know. But it seems to me, if I sit here, we will not see the disjuncture between the intervention you made when there was that huge crisis that led you to close the offices, and post the closure and the of those offices, what has transpired, what improvements are there. So I think if you can help us with those things as a committee, because we also want a transparent process, a process that is fair, a process that many of our people can participate in it. So I'm giving you, let's make it a point that by Wednesday, you are ready to give us the details, including a response on the issues that we sent to you. We have exceeded even our time. On that note, the meeting stands adjourned. Let's meet next week, Tuesday. You are released, sir.
Thank you, Chair.
Mama Linda.
Thank you, Chair.
Hello.
How
are you, darling?
I'm good, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, good.
I haven't heard your voice in a long time.
Hi, Mr. Valmaran.
Are you fine?
I'm good, good, good.
Mama,
hi, Mr. Langa.
Yes, Miss, how are you?
Mr. Langa is in deep thought.
Yeah, he's thinking far. What's your problem, Mr. Langa?